President Marcos visits Abra a day after the province was rocked by a powerful quake. Meanwhile, damage in the Ilocos region alone pegged at nearly 34 billion pesos. The spokesperson of the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council will give us the latest casualty count and cost of damage. Japan's latest COVID wave hits a new peak with over 200,000 fresh cases. And later on in the program, we'll tackle President Marcos's tax reform agenda with Mon Abrea. He is the chief tax advisor of the Asian Consulting Group. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now.
Hindi pa tayo makikit dun.
Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with President Ferdinand Marcos Jr.'s visit to Abra a day after a powerful quake rocked the province and other parts of Luzon. There he presided over a situation briefing where government officials gave updates on the quake's toll. Latest tally shows the tremor killed at least 5 people and injured over 130 others. Over 20,000 individuals were affected. Marcos instructed government officials to prioritize restoring power, water, and communication lines in all quick-hit areas.
Unfortunately, yung pag-inspeksyon ng linya will take time, but I think we will just have to do as much as we can, as quickly as possible. Of course, that's going to be for the key for our relief efforts, lahat ng gagawin natin. We have to be able to communicate and we have to be able to operate. So we need, that's why inuna ko yung dalawang yun, to find out what our capabilities are. I'm particularly interested dun sa that simple purification system because we don't know how long it's going to take. We should procure more of those because immediately water is always going to be a problem. Para hindi, you know, things like cholera, diphtheria will come into play.
As for the damage to infrastructure, the Office of Civil Defense pegs the initial cost at 33.8 billion pesos in Ilocos region alone. In Ilocos Sur, authorities call for caution as the province is still experiencing aftershocks. Let's get an update now on the latest situation there from our correspondent, Adrian Ayalin. Adrian, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, Vegan City Mayor Bonito Singson is discouraging tourists from coming to this historic town, especially since aftershocks are still being felt, at least here in Vegan City. The strongest that we felt was around 4 o'clock this morning, which jolted everyone in the hotel we were staying, and most of the tourists and the hotel staff were alerted, and they were asked to go outside. It was a strong quake that we felt at around 4 this morning. That's why Mayor Singson said in an interview this morning with the media, along with Senator Aimee Marcos, that he is discouraging tourists from coming. Although there are already tourists here, and in fact, in some of the tourists in some of the hotels, we saw tourists arriving this morning. The key word here is that the mayor is discouraging, but it's still pretty much open. The hotels are open. At least one hotel owner we've spoken with this morning said that he has contacted a civil engineer to declare the structure safe, because in the executive order released by Mayor Singson, it was stated there that that structure should be inspected by structural engineers first. It was not clear if city engineers will be going to the hotels around Vegan City, but that hotel owner we have spoken with said that he has already contacted a private civil engineer. Most of the establishments here, the structures here in Vegan, have no visible damage. But if you can see back Behind me is a it's an abandoned old structure. The rubble is still there. In fact, a car was smashed to the ground. This has to be cleared by authorities here in Vigan City. But generally here in Vigan, most of the hotels are open, but the restaurants are still closed, and they are still waiting for the advice of the city mayor. As well as in Bantay town, also here in the province of Ilocos Sur, the church there, also a popular tourist destination because of its bell tower, the St. Augustine Parish Church, remains closed, according to the parish priest there, Father Lovell Solier. He is still waiting for further inspection and clearance from the engineers, officials of the Department of Public Works and Highways. That's the latest here in Ilocos Sur. Back to you, Carmina.
Yes, Adrian, a couple of questions for you before we let you go. As you mentioned, some establishments are closed, but tourists still continue to come. So, and tourists continue to remain there, at least in Vigan. So what are they doing when most of the establishments, or at least some of them, are closed? Where do they go?
They just roam around on Calle Crisologo because they are staying within the Calle Crisologo area. That is where the cobblestone street here, the heritage part, so to speak, of Vigan City. Just this morning, we saw a group of teachers doing a TikTok dance because they can't go around. Most of the establishments here are still closed, like museums. The Sikia Museum is also badly damaged. It's closed to the public, as well as other tourist spots here. So they are just there taking pictures in Calle Crisologo. A group of tourists we also saw this morning. They just passed by Vigan, but their destination is Pagudpud, also here in the Ilocos region. So that's what tourists are doing, making do with what they can. Just because they are already here. But again, it's important to stress that the mayor is discouraging tourists from going to Vigan City. But again, it's difficult for the establishments here, the business owners here, especially hotels, because they are really trying their best to survive this earthquake and to remain in business. That's why, again, the hotel owner we have spoken with has already contacted a private civil engineer, so that at least if the city officials would come in and inspect their hotel, they can show a paper saying that their building was declared safe by a civil engineer. Carmina?
Adrian, talk to us about what happened this morning. There was quite a strong earthquake as well that happened this morning while you were there waiting for your day to start. Tell us about what happened. Were you asked to evacuate, and maybe the trauma that's still being felt by residents there because of the powerful quake that struck yesterday?
Yes, tourists and residents did not get enough sleep because through the night there were aftershocks. We would feel some slight tremor every now and then, but the major one was happened at 4 in the morning, and after that people, the guests in the hotel we were staying in, ran out of the hotel and stayed outside for about 30 minutes, and then again they went back inside, but only to go home hours later. I believe they're already on their way home, that group of teachers from Pampanga. One of them even took a video of a glass on the table shaking because of the tremor. It was really a strong one. We are not sure here if it was an earth, if it was a major earthquake, or it was just an aftershock, or perhaps related to earthquakes, other earthquakes. But again, it was strong enough to wake everyone up and get out of their beds. Carmina?
All right. So the situation there continues to evolve, and we're going to rely on you, Adrian, to give us the latest and keep us up to speed. Adrian Ayalin there, reporting to us live from Vigan in Ilocos Sur. Thanks, Adrian. Take care. Keep safe. And from there, we're going to get an update now on the casualties and damage caused by Wednesday's strong quake. We're now joined by the spokesperson of the National Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council, Mark Timbal. Mark, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Ms. Carmina, good afternoon, and to all our viewers as well. Good afternoon, everyone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wish I could talk to you at some point where there's no tragedy or no disaster. But then again, that's your job, and you always have to be the face of disaster. help us make sense of things now. We're getting conflicting or different. I shouldn't say conflicting, but different figures from the ground. The president pegged it at about 418 million damage, but we have other reports coming in, some close to 40 billion for the Ilocos region alone. What are your current numbers? What can you tell us?
Yes, assessments are ongoing, Ms. Carmina. That's why we have figures that are being compared by the different departments. Once these figures are finalized upon cross-referencing, this will be reported to us here at the NDRMC. So far, what we have here, we have an update in the casualty counting. Earlier today, we went to 4 fatalities because the Gataran Cagayan fatality was already tagged as non-existent. Nobody died in Gataran, but we had injured persons there. So we went to 4, but this morning we had another item reported to us. So we're back to 5. We have 5 fatalities reported now at the NDRMC again. The 4, the original 4, were the 2 fatalities from La Trinidad and 2 Babenguet. We have 1 from Balbalan in Kalinga province and 1 from Banged Abra. These are already confirmed by our counterparts in the local governments. And then we have 1 from Ilocos Sur, subject for verification still as of this point. We have injured parties, persons, 131 persons were already reported, as injured. A lot of them, 113, came from the Cordilleras. 17 came from Ilocos region, and we have 1 from region 2. For damaged infrastructure, we were able to receive information that 61 schools were damaged as a consequence of the earthquake. And infrastructure damage has been initially tagged at 33.8 million pesos. This includes bridges that had been damaged in La Union, in Ilocos Sur, and in the Cordilleras. The damage to agriculture, there's still ongoing assessments for that. We were able to receive report of 349 damaged houses, 325 in the Cordilleras and 33 in Region 1. Power restoration efforts continue in the Cordilleras. We have 36 areas with power interruption reported there. Ilocos Sur had a province-wide power interruption, but they had power restored as of 2 p.m. yesterday. But there are still some areas, a few areas that are having power interruption. Signal interruption also was reported in the Cordilleras, but there's ongoing repair being done by our counterparts in the telco. We have been informed of the continuing search, rescue, and retrieval operations being done by the local government units along with the response effort to assist the evacuated population. The Armed Forces of the Philippines, the Philippine National Police, the Bureau of Fire Protection, and the Coast Guard had augmented the local teams to widen the coverage of the search and rescue missions. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that the casualties will not have additional numbers, but since the reports continue coming in, we may be having some adjustments later today.
Okay, Mark, let me just jump off from what you just said about the search and rescue operations that continues. But how many are missing and where, in which areas?
So far, Ms. Carmina, we haven't received a complete report of missing persons. The local governments are still consolidating those data, that particular data. But the national teams are already on standby in the locality once the local government unit calls for reinforcements. But what's happening now is that the local disaster response teams, the local rescue teams, are leading the operations.
Mm-hmm. But for sure, there have been initial reports about isolated areas or maybe missing persons.
That's correct. We have received unverified reports of missing persons in the Cordilleras. But the figures are still being finalized. There's still ongoing coordination for that. We haven't received information on isolated areas because so far, communication-wise, all disaster managers are in contact from the barangay level up to the national level. Coordination on relief support continues, as you have seen in the reporting done in ABRA earlier today with the president. The DSWD is on the ground to support the local rescue, the local relief efforts.
Mm-mm. So we talk about the missing people, persons, although you're saying it's still unverified and they continue to investigate this, would this be due to landslide, rock slides?
What's happening in the confusion of after the earthquake, Ms. Carmina, some people may have gone, a lot of people have evacuated and some may have gone to other evacuation sites. That's why their families weren't able to contact them or aren't aware of their actual locations. So we're checking with the PNP as well as the local government units to ascertain the persons who are in the evacuation center and compare the data with the reports being sent, being received in relation to missing persons.
Mm-hmm. And this is why communication lines, sustained communication lines, really is important in times of disasters like this. You mentioned power interruption in some areas, signal interruption as well in some areas. What's the culprit for this and how soon can we get that back up?
Yeah, it's a natural, it's part of procedure that the local power cooperatives would stop power distribution to make sure that if in case a power line gets damaged, it will not cause any electrocution on the ground. But since the earthquake, the major earthquake has already passed and we're just having some aftershocks, a lot of areas that didn't have any damaged power lines had their power restored immediately. But those who had their lines damaged, the local power cooperatives are still fixing that. So we're hoping that within 24 to 48 hours, while the teams are handling this carefully, since it's still we're experiencing aftershocks pa rin, so everyone's carefully doing their job, especially the road clearing operations. We don't want them to be victimized by another landslide too. We're hoping that power as well as signal communications will be restored as soon as possible. The teams are on the ground to make the necessary repairs.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about agriculture now. The president also stressing the importance and really looking at this. Mm-hmm. Because while you can see damage to infrastructure quite easily through cracks and what have you, when you talk about the irrigation systems and the water lines, mm-hmm. that's not easily detected. Tell us about the amount of effort that you're putting into this and what kind of operations do you have on the ground to ensure that water lines aren't damaged, contamination of water supply will not happen.
Yes, one of the good news that we've encountered in the updates is that the dams in the affected areas remain strong. No damages had been sustained in the dams, as reported by our dam management authorities. The president also, you're correct, the president stressed the importance of determining whether the irrigation lines have been affected or damaged by the earthquake. So our...
Mark?
Hello, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. Now you're clear. Go ahead. You were saying.
Our teams from the National Irrigation Authority are on the scene to do inspections of the irrigation lines connected to the dams. If once it is determined that these lines had been damaged, appropriate measures to rehabilitate as well as to fix these lines will be done by our irrigation authorities. In terms of water distribution, there are some areas that have reported water interruption, this interruption of water services. So this is also being attended to by the local power, local water utility companies. Mm-hmm. The priority is to make sure that the water returns, but the water remains potable.
Yes.
The current measure, water is also part of the items being distributed. Bottled water is being distributed in the evacuation sites. And we're also deploying water treatment facilities, water treatment equipment to the evacuation sites to support, to address the need for clean water.
So is the guidance now, Mark, to not drink the water first from the water pipes and the faucets until these LGUs are sure that the water is potable?
During the conversation with the president, I believe that there was a warning to the public was cautioned to from just drinking water out of the faucet, especially if there is a noticeable difference in the quality of the water. The president advised that these can be boiled for good measure, and that they can also use the water treatment equipment that is being provided by the national government for this purpose.
You know, we're hoping to talk to Secretary, DSWD Secretary Erwin Tulfo in a bit, but I understand he's with the president, so we're really going to try hard to get in touch with him to get the latest figures. But from what you know so far...
With regard to the family food packs that had been distributed by to the affected areas, we have more than 300,000 pesos worth of family food packs that have already been given away. We have more than enough supplies to sustain the local effort for relief items.
Yeah, but what I was going to ask you, Mark, is that Secretary Erwin Tulfo in the situation briefing this morning mentioned how many families, how many individuals are affected, but that's not the complete picture. So I was hoping that you could give us more details to that. If you do have other details, maybe another count as to how many families are affected across all the areas affected by the quake.
So far, what we have in the recent updating is that in the Cordilleras alone, we have 12,945 people affected by the earthquake. 21 evacuation sites had been established for this affected population. We have 541 individuals staying in these evacuation sites. And but there are people who left their homes but are just camping outside. They are 567 persons camping outside their houses. As you know, we're experiencing continuing aftershocks. So people are not yet advised to get back inside their buildings or their houses until such time that this had been evaluated and determined as structurally sound for their own safety.
And so we continue to wait, but for how long, Mark, until when do you think you could give us a really clear picture of the extent of damage brought about by the quake?
Aerial inspections are being done as we speak, but there's also consideration on the weather, and we are also monitoring the weather anomaly. So this will also affect the operations. It increases the risk of landslides in those areas, Ms. Carmina. So we're still warning our citizens to make sure that if they are still within those danger zones for landslides, they have to evacuate, especially when the local government informs them of that. In terms of the actual damages, we would be able to have a more comprehensive counting as the days go by. USEC Solidum in the briefing told the president that in the first 2-3 days we can experience stronger aftershocks, but it will subside as the days go by. So we're hoping that it can the sub the subsidence of the earthquake incidents would happen quickly so that we can continue with our operations unhampered by these aftershocks.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Mark Timbal there, spokesperson of the NDRRMC. Thanks for joining us today. Take care. Keep safe. Really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, authorities are still assessing the full extent of the damage left behind by Wednesday's tremor in the mountain province. Our correspondent Robert Manu now joins us with that story. Robert, over to you. What more can you tell us?
Carmina, the damage assessment team of the Sahuntan province are on ground for the second day after a stress quake yesterday. According to MDRRMO head Mildred Piloden, 1:30 this afternoon, they will consolidate the report of the second-day assessment. Meantime, 28 families in Sitio, Buma, Katingan, Besao are still afraid of their earthquake that struck yesterday and thus they opted to stay in a nearby evacuation center, Buma Elementary School. According to Mercy Tayawa, they felt the strong tremor yesterday and series of aftershocks. That's why they are afraid to go home yet. Also, their home is located near the cliff. The Bisao Municipal Social Welfare and Development are now here in Bunga Elementary School to check the situations of their residents. They are also distributing food to families. Bisao Municipal Social Welfare and Development also requesting the national government some assistance for their residents. Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Robert Banu there joining us on the line. Robert, take care. Keep safe. And from there, we're going to take a break. Up ahead, the Philippine Central Bank says it is prepared to manage the spillover effects from the U.S. Federal Reserve's massive rate hike. More on that when we come back. Dateline Philippines will be back after these. Stay with AMC. We are back. We're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. President Marcos visits Abra a day after the province was rocked by a powerful quake. Meanwhile, damage in the Ilocos region alone pegged at nearly 34 billion pesos. And Japan's latest COVID wave hits a new peak with over 200,000 fresh cases. Back with more news, the National Telecommunications Commission orders telco companies to provide free call and charging services in quake-hit areas. The order is valid until August 5th. In response, Globe Telecom deployed a station offering free calls, charging, and Wi-Fi in Abra. It was set up at the Banggit Plaza near the Lagangilang town. That's the epicenter of the earthquake. PLDT Smart also deployed teams to set up free call stations in Abra and Ilocos Sur. In business, the U.S. Federal Reserve continues its aggressive campaign to cool inflation. Policymakers unanimously backed a 75 basis point hike. It was the second 3/4 point rate increase and the fourth hike this year. The Fed noted there are signs the U.S. economy is slowing, but as it asserts, failure to tame inflation is not an option. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell also signaled plans to continue hiking rates while staving off a recession.
I do not think the U.S. is currently in a recession. And the reason is there are just too many areas of the economy that are performing, too well. And of course, I would point to the labor market in particular. While another unusually large increase could be appropriate at our next meeting, that is a decision that will depend on the data we get between now and then.
The Philippine Central Bank sees the Fed rate hike further affecting exchange rate movements. It says it is prepared to take all necessary actions to address inflation risks arising from an excessive depreciation of the peso. Here at home, ABS-CBN President and CEO Carlo Katigbak says the company's return to profitability is possible in the near term. He made that statement during ABS-CBN's annual shareholders meeting Thursday morning. Katigbak also revealed steady improvements in the company's financial situation. He says ABS-CBN is committed to rewarding shareholders who stayed with the firm even after Congress denied its franchise renewal in 2020.
Let me assure you that we are committed to achieving the full potential of ABS-CBN and substantially improving the price of your shares. The commercial partnerships we have signed with companies like Zoe and TV5 have resulted in an improvement in our ratings. from a low of 1.1% after our shutdown, we have achieved a 4.1% rating, with prime time growing from 2.1% to 9.6%. Digital revenues were at $2.3 billion in 2021, increasing by 48% from 2020. International revenues now account for 19% of total revenues, and we continue to exert efforts to expand this revenue stream.
Management has yet to decide if a new franchise is aligned with the company's strategic plans. ABS-CBN has been distributing content through A2C, GMA7, TV5, and Hong Kong-based streaming platform Viu. ABS-CBN is the parent firm of this news channel. The Bureau of Internal Revenue welcomes the Marcos administration's push to impose taxes on digital goods and services as part of the president's tax reform agenda. During his first State of the Nation address, President Marcos said collecting taxes on digital services could generate some 11 billion pesos in 2023 alone. But BIR Deputy Commissioner Marisa Cabreros maintains a clear set of guidelines is needed to properly implement the policy.
To put order into things, kailangan pong ma-update ang ating batas na masabi at mabalangkas po ang papano ang taxation rule nila. Kasi minsan sa isang batas, magandang sinabi na taxable. Pero ang challenge po sa BIR is, papano? Papano ko bubuwisan?
And joining us now for his take on President Marcos's tax reform agenda is Mon Abrea. He is the chief tax advisor of the Asian Consulting Group. Mon, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carmina.
All right. So during his State of the Nation address, President Marcos giving a clear direction there that he will prioritize taxing the digital economy and also ease of paying taxes bills. First of all, what do you make of that move and how will it ultimately benefit MSMEs and the consumers? Let's tackle the digital economy first, Mon.
Actually, I agree with the position of the Bureau of Internal Revenue mechanism, the infrastructure, resources, and capacity building of the tax agency should be prioritized and secured before we even consider taxing other transactions, including the digital economy. Mm-hmm. And number two, as you've mentioned, the MSMEs, we have to be very, very careful considering that a lot of our MSMEs either shut down or went bankrupt during the pandemic. So even if, assuming they made money or they are making income, the government should give them a leeway rather than just imposing another set of taxes. The target should be, which is based on the proposed digital economy taxation, are the foreign tech companies. And that's where the challenge will be. You know, Carmina, we've been attending and very active in the international tax conferences pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And taxing Amazon, Facebook, and all these tech firms, which are mostly registered here in the U.S., is really not close to impossible, but it's really very difficult considering that they pay their taxes in the U.S., if they even pay, but not in the countries where they are operating because they are a digital platform. So if the law will be legislated, that should be the priority because the billions of revenues are not from our MSMEs, but from these digital platforms. So if they can really tax them like OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, is proposing a global minimum corporate income tax, wherein they will be forced to give a percentage of their income to the country where they are operating or where they generated it. But right now, Europe and other countries are imposing digital service tax, not 12% VAT. I would like to reiterate that, Carmina, it's a very reckless and honestly idle move to just impose 12% VAT without even studying it. Cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, and whatnot. So how do we actually expect BIR to collect it? Or we will just pass it to our consumers and users like us. So if I am a subscriber of Netflix, Spotify, I just pay additional 12%. Very easy for the government, but it's not really addressing the problem and collecting the right taxes from those who are really generating hefty revenue from this digital economy.
We're going to talk more about that in a bit, but I want to address the elephant in the room. Do you think the president would have had enough leverage to take on this tax reform agenda of his had he said something about the $203 billion estate tax liability of his family?
Actually, I was quite disappointed that he did not mention anything about it. Because, you know, in collecting taxes, we talk about moral ascendancy. We talk about transparency. Where will the taxes go? And given that the estimate he made to collect taxes on digital taxation is only $11 billion, then my question as a tax advocate, Carmina, is what happens to the $300 billion unused budget, to the more than $700 billion misused budget, to the graft and corruption cases, to the Farmali case, and to their unpaid estate tax? Are we again just throwing new taxes or passing the burden to our people, given our situation right now, and promise us heaven and earth again? So this is not just a matter of statistics or giving us projected revenue, Carmina. We are thinking people. We know that there are those who need to pay taxes, and we need BIR to really run after tax evaders. What happened to Michael Young? What happened to the husband of Rose Nonolin? Remember, Carmina, I risked my life being in that Senate investigation, and now I am not hiding. I'm studying in Harvard, hoping that I can help our country better. But it's just frustrating that we are given new numbers, new promises, without even resolving. What happened last year? What happened before election? Where will those unpaid taxes go?
Well, no less than the president's sister, Senator Amy Marcos, prior to the sauna, really wanted the president to even get mad and say it out loud and you know, go after corrupt people in government. But some observers have pointed out that just fell flat, and not even fell flat on their ears, but that the fact that he didn't even mention anything about corruption. Of course, you talk about Senate President Juan Miguel Zubiri saying that it has been implied. But what does implied tell us about the difference between an implied action against corruption versus explicitly saying that he will be strong on corruption, first and foremost, before even talking about any tax reform agenda, Mon?
Well, number one, the president should have mentioned anything about how they will resolve their unpaid estate taxes. You know, I would understand if the interest will be waived. You mentioned about the $203 billion. That includes the interest for almost 30 years. I would understand if because he is in power already, that he would use his leverage to waive the interest, but at least pay the $23 billion, which was already decided by the court. And it's funny that even a finance secretary is saying, let the court decide on that. The court decided already. It's up to now the BIR. Are we expecting the new commissioner to file criminal charges against the family of the president? That's unlikely. It will not happen. She was appointed by the president. I don't think she would dare file criminal charges. But Carmina, that is the last resort of the BIR. So it's up to the president now to reach out and to put a closure to this unpaid estate tax. Number two, the explicit one, honestly, other than resolving it, is leave the bank secrecy law and let's really run after tax evaders, starting with Congress. All this ill-gotten wealth. I mean, we can keep talking about this, Carmina, with all the policies and new taxes. But believe me, the people of the Philippines are not stupid. The more they know that the people in government are not paying their own taxes, that they are not handling it properly, the more companies will not declare proper revenues. The more NGOs, foundations will be established so that they can just reach out and help our Filipino people directly, rather than entrust it to the government. Remember, it's a tax incentive or it's a tax shield if you course your fundings through an NGO or a foundation.
Mon, you talk about running after tax evaders. You've heard that time and again for decades now. But there's also another way of getting revenue in, and that's by way of taxing the wealthy. Senator Sherwin Gatchalian, many others have supported this. What do you make of this? What sense do you get? Is this actually possible if we were to talk about generating more income for the government?
You know, it's for me, it's unfair that we will again pass the burden to the wealthy, assuming they paid their taxes already through their corporations. It is like being persecuted for being wealthy. I guess a better option is to declare the general tax amnesty, lift the bank secrecy. Anyone of us who failed to declare a true income, our net worth, whether we are private citizens or politicians or people in the government, the BIR will now be able to run after us because they can access our bank accounts, or hopefully including offshore accounts. Because for all we know, all these ill-gotten wealths are no longer in the territory of the Philippines. So we cannot be reckless, Carmina, in just imposing new taxes. It's easy to propose taxes, but like what Deputy Commissioner Cabreros mentioned, how do we implement it? You have to help BIR. We have to fund them. We have to capacitate them. We cannot just blindly throw new taxes like the cosmetics tax. What happened to the cosmetic tax?
So let's get into that right now, because as Ibon Foundation puts it, what we have for next year's budget, they're calling it an austerity budget. First of all, do you think the same, that what we actually have is an austerity budget? And second, how will you actually capacitate the BIR and help them to sort of go into the next fiscal year, knowing that there is an austerity budget and knowing the gargantuan task of them, their gargantuan task in helping the government balance everything out for the benefit of the Filipino people?
Number one, Carmina, I think it's high time that the Congress considers the COA report before they even pass the new budget. It's always what happens is that we always get the COA report after the budget has been passed. The COA report should be considered seriously, like what I mentioned earlier. This is not just from former Senator Lacson, from Ombudsman and other agencies, that there are really a huge unused budget every year. The average is around 300 billion. The average misuse budget is around 700 billion. And we're not yet talking about the graft and corruption and inefficiencies in the BIR. That alone is more than 1 trillion pesos. So if the government, under the leadership of President Marcos, is talking about right sizing, then we should also rationalize our budget and find a way to reduce it, but increase the budget of BIR. Digital transformation is the key. That was mentioned by Finance Secretary Diokno. I absolutely agree. But that doesn't mean that we just end with that. We have to fund them. We have to hire more technocrats, data analysts, really experts who can really decipher and go through all these cryptocurrency transactions, blockchain. For all we know, Carmina, more than 50% of income are no longer declared because of all these new platforms. And what's the business of BIR? They just run after the brick and mortar. They run after the influencers because they see them on social media. How about those that they don't see or they don't access?
Yeah, so how do you think the revenue generation coming from, or revenue collection coming from the BIR, how do you think that'll help, considering, as what Ibon says, the austerity budget that we'll have for next year? Is it going to be solely on the BIR to help this government out?
Well, I think it's also it also needs realignment with the customs. Other than automating customs as well, it's important, Carmina, that this smuggling issue will really be addressed. Remember, once smuggled goods get into our market, it goes to the underground economy. Wala na magde-declare niyan. Everybody will benefit from it, even legit businesses. Once they get it into their inventory, they will have to either buy receipts or under-declare their purchases because it is not declared in customs. There are no documents, no VAT, no excise tax, and so on and so forth. So I guess address smuggling. Then for BIR, really address tax evasion. For all we know, Carmina, that whatever budget the government needs will be funded by just running after these tax evaders, including foreigners. Mm-hmm. Only in the Philippines that the foreigners are bragging about their connection with the Malacanang, with all these businesses, pick photo ops left and right, but they are not registered. They are not paying taxes. What are we doing to our country while we run after local companies, MSMEs, penalizing them because they filed their tax returns late? You know, as an advocate, it bleeds. It my heart bleeds because we educate everyone, we convince everyone to help our country to pay taxes. Then we see that there are those who run away with their obligations and they're even bragging about it.
Well, finally, you got to talk about the other thing that the president mentioned in his State of the Nation address, that he is going to prioritize ease of paying taxes bills. What do you make of that? And will that help solve the situation, the picture that you just painted for us?
I honestly, Carmina, the best person to talk about ease of paying taxes are two people which are not being heard during Congress and Senate hearings. First, MSMEs, the ordinary taxpayers, they cannot afford anymore. Nobody does the books of accounts, Carmina. We have to get rid of those books of accounts. We have to get rid of all those paperworks. We either consider a flat tax system or a fixed tax for marginal income earners. You know, according to our tax regulations, marginal income earners are those with annual income of 100,000 pesos. Even a sari-sari store makes more than 100,000 pesos in a year. It has to be updated. Number two, get rid of the non-value-added, very costly compliance. Consider a flat tax system. That is ease of paying taxes. Then listen to BIR. What do they need? It might be ease of paying taxes, easy for us, but will not be easy for BIR because they don't have budget. Let's face it, all this digital, all this automation and IT projects in the BIR are funded by foreign grants. USAID, ADB, JICA. It's not, I don't know what Congress is doing. Did you know that BIR is the second lowest budget in all attached agencies? The lowest, I think, is the NHA. And the second to the lowest is BIR. And yet we rely on BIR to fund our government, all these trillions of budget. It's a no-brainer, Carmina, but I don't know what happened, why we allowed this to happen. We blame BIR for all the corruption in BIR, but we don't fund them properly. We don't pay their people properly. So I guess it's high time, if the president's really serious, then do something that makes sense.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Mon Abrea there, he's the Chief Tax Advisor of Asian Consulting Group. Mon, nice to see you again, and thanks for joining us. Thanks for staying up late for us. I know that you're Zooming in from the U.S. Thanks again. Really appreciate it. Japan's daily COVID-19 cases hit a record high of over 209,000 as the country continues to battle its seventh wave of infections. More than half of the nation's 47 prefectures also logged record numbers of cases on Wednesday, including Hokkaido and Kyoto. Despite that, the country has not imposed mobility restrictions. That's as Prime Minister Fumio Kishida seeks to strike a balance between socioeconomic activities and measures to contain the spread of the virus. The Philippines records over 2,700 new COVID cases. Active infections now stand at over 27,000. Almost 1,000 new infections were detected in Metro Manila, prompting local officials to ramp up booster vaccinations. The cities of San Juan and Makati will start offering second booster shots to more groups beginning today. People aged 50 and above and immunocompromised adults are now allowed to get their second booster shots, following the green light from the health department. The U.S. reports over 1,000 new monkeypox cases. That's the biggest one-day increase on record. In total, the U.S. has recorded 4,600 monkeypox cases. According to the latest data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are now over 20,000 cases in 71 countries. Because of this, Australia has declared monkeypox a communicable disease incident of national significance. Australia has so far detected 44 cases, majority of which are returning travelers. A low-pressure area off Basco Batanes seen developing into a tropical depression this weekend. Let's get the latest on the weather now from our resident meteorologist, Ariel Rojas. Ariel, over to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Carmina. That's right. Low pressure area last located 945 kilometers east of Basco, Batanes may develop into a tropical depression by this weekend. It will be given the local name Esther. No landfall scenario, however, is seen. Meanwhile, the low-pressure area over the West Philippine Sea dissipated at 2 a.m. today. As for the tropical depression outside the Philippine area of responsibility, it was located more than 1,800 kilometers east of extreme northern Luzon, with maximum winds of 55 kilometers per hour near its center and gusts up to 70 kilometers per hour. It is moving northwestward at a speed of 25 kilometers per hour. While it is forecast to intensify into a tropical storm this afternoon or evening, it will not enter the Philippine area of responsibility or affect the weather in the country. The LPA inside PAR is pulling the habagat, so cloudy skies with intermittent rains will be experienced in Isabela, Quirino, Central Luzon, Calabarzon, Mimaropa, Bicol region, most of the Visayas, Dinagat Islands, and Surigao del Norte. While not affected by the habagat, earthquake hit Ilocos region, Cordillera, and the rest of Cagayan Valley will also have intense thunderstorms in the afternoon along with most areas in Mindanao. And here in Metro Manila, the skies will also be mostly cloudy with some rain showers. That's the latest on the weather. This is Ariel Rojas. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel. Really appreciate it. And before we go, the National Historical Commission of the Philippines set to help rebuild and restore some historic sites, churches, and structures damaged by the Luzon quake. For now, it is calling for the safeguarding of the artifacts and the retrieval of important structural parts. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.